Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Kendra. I'm in the middle of typing a long email. Yell at me when Doug comes on board, would you?
Okay.
Thanks. All right, I finished typing my long email. I don't know that we necessarily need to wait for Doug. I know he's been on a lot of these calls with the recovery team and the. What do you think, Beth? Should we go ahead and let Mo get?
We're 5 minutes past, so if he's got something going on, I'm sure he'll just be here as soon as he can.
Okay, Mo?
He te just texted and said he'll be a few minutes late, so I would take that to mean go ahead and get started.
Okay, Mo, let's go ahead and get started. Which would require you to unmute yourself on one of your connections.
I'm unmuted on my.
You were for a moment.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yep, loud and clear, Mo. Good morning.
Good morning. We just got done with our recovery team meeting this morning. It was a longer meeting as we expected because the part of it due to, the transition we're going through with some personnel and then some challenges that have presented themselves. But we did have some good discussion and I'm going to just pretty much try to focus on those activities today. For the public outreach and communication line of operation, Robin continues to complete all the tasks in the work plan. What I'm really going to skip to then is in conjunction with the data management line of operation. This continues to be somewhat of a challenge, and I think this challenge was just exacerbated with the transition and the further strain on resources due to that transition. but trying to make sure that we're providing accurate and consistent information or data in a timely manner as well. And it seems that it appears anyway that, you know, we're between two, we have a decision to make of do we want the immediate data or as timely as possible, and then the risk is some inaccuracies, or do we want to make sure that the data is consistent but there be somewhat of a delay? And I know that Robin and Roberta and Emmy discussed having a meeting to try to review the data sources that are available, the update scheme and all that, to come up and review that and come up with a new plan. And they should be briefing that to the recovery team next week on Wednesday. But that does, it continues to be a challenge. Like I said, that challenge was just exacerbated with the recent turnover and some resource challenges. So I don't have a good plan to discuss going forward, but we should get something at the recovery team next week.
So Mo, let me interrupt. I read Commissioner Melton's email this morning, and I cannot help but share that frustration. And I understand that there are challenges in the transition. I understand there are challenges in the data gathering, but I mean, honestly, as just as a regular citizen of the community, it's hard to understand how this turned into so much rocket science, and what to me is seems to be a limited set of pretty straightforward numbers. So I appreciate that it is probably somewhat more complicated than what the average person can fully grasp, but I guess I just share Commissioner Melton's frustration. And to her point in that email, just establishing a few very straightforward data points that are accurate and easy for the public to understand, and taking down the rest of it. So I'm not sure, I'm just sharing frustrations.
May I just add, just so you know, Commissioner Corrigan, so on the homepage, there is the information for the community of what our case count is. The challenge is that that's the information that I can manipulate manually. So that is not matched up with the dashboard. So I just want to make sure that you understand the distinction. So, you know, we've talked about whether we just take the dashboard down until we resolve this issue, but Roberta, Emmy, and I are going to try to resolve that today with the dashboard. But the community has access to information, and we've been trying to tell them to go to the homepage. It's not consistent. The homepage is not consistent with the dashboard. So I just wanted to make sure you knew that.
Yeah, thank you.
So, but I think, I'm not trying to argue with anything here, but that highlights the exact problem, which is that we have multiple sources of data on our own website that are inconsistent with one another. And even that just seems problematic. So, Tim, I was on the recovery call this morning, and definitely they're making it a priority. So thanks for your support of my commentary. And Mo, I guess I feel like I understood that Roberta and Emmy were gonna also work on, just at least in the short term, how we can make sure that all of the data that's on our website is accurate, in addition to figuring out these kind of system type things. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I guess the question, you know, that I have as well is, I think there's two parts to it, and the single data source is one big thing. So, you know, should we be generating our own data and then reporting on that data before it gets into whatever the recognized or acknowledged master data sheet is? So, for example, let me talk about this recent, case from The Haven. you know, they go out to, they get transported to the hospital. They do that PCR test. Within 90 minutes, we have a result that says he's positive. So are we going to report on that today? Even though I'm sure it won't be, I think it will be in Cedars yet, and so it won't be on that master database. So that's kind of the challenges that I think we have if we get in front of whatever the acknowledged source of that is going to be. I just don't know if we need to rush to some of that reporting until it gets into whatever official database we're going to use.
I personally, you know, if I were to give direction to the team on this, I would sacrifice quickness for accuracy. I don't know from a decision-making standpoint and from a, I think the conflict here is we're trying to put out data information right away when we get it, and then it ends up that there is some reconciliation needed. You know, the state makes some decisions about which county each case is going to be attributed to, some of those kinds of things. I would lean toward us waiting a day and making sure that the data, that the numbers that we're putting out there are accurate, versus the community needs to have this information the second that it's available. And I know, Robin, that you don't totally agree with me on that, but that's what I think should happen.
But that's what we have been doing.
Well, so I heard you though say that you're worried about rumor control and making sure we get all this out immediately. I would be less concerned about that and more concerned about us making sure what we put out there in terms of numbers is aligned with the state data. That's my comment.
So I wouldn't disagree with that, Beth, but I think the problem is that reconciliation process isn't taking place in one day. It's taking 2-3 days or whatever it's taking. And so again, thinking about it from the perspective of a citizen is, really, you have this outbreak potentially going on and that we're not actually receiving the information for 2-4 days, whatever it is. That, I mean, that's problematic as well.
So I would say that I think there's two types of data. There's just the immediate, like we have a positive case or we have an outbreak. And then there's kind of the trend data that we really are utilizing more for policy decisions, those kinds of things. I think the trend data needs to be accurate. I think we have news. The news is there's an outbreak at the Haven. You know, the news is there's a new case, whatever. But in terms of the counts, I think, and the trends and that data, I think it's critical that is, remains accurate. And I just think there may be two different things. But I guess follow-up would be, what I heard on the recovery call this morning is they're making this a priority to figure it out. And come up with a plan, which is all I'm asking for.
Yeah, I think that's all we can ask for at this point, so.
Well, the other thing that I was asking is, we can't just wait until our epidemiologist is on board and ready to go, because it'll be several weeks before that is the reality. I know that we'll want that person to take a lot of ownership of this, but there is a short-term problem that we need to just figure out right away.
So in fairness to our own group, when I go to other counties, such as Eagle County or Summit County, the information that's available there is equally impenetrable, in my view. It's really hard to... It doesn't seem like anybody's got this right yet, so.
Everybody's trying.
All right, Mo, I'm sorry I took you off track there, but.
No, it's not on track. I think we got at least some statements that were made. I think we're very clear, and it does provide us some guidance going forward regarding, you know, accuracy over speed. So we'll continue to work on that Moving on to mitigation protocols is a fairly brief discussion due to two of our, with the lead and as well as one of our support personnel not being on the line. But the updates that I do have is that we have a total of seven individuals from Steamboat in addition to our own staff, specifically environmental health, that are doing the protocol monitoring. I've spoken to all but one of those individuals from Steamboat, and we start putting them into a schedule. I believe that starting, well, I'll review the schedule with next with Scott when he gets back next week. But sometime then next week, we should be able to have an individual identified every day or nearly every day to go out and do some monitoring. It won't obviously be all day. We'll most likely look at limiting it to 2 or 3 hour blocks, and we'll schedule that different times of the day, and then Environment Health will come up with a schedule. But we have spoken to the individuals, and we are putting that schedule together. For community testing, it looks like our the county person that's been supporting the majority of those, her availability will be significantly decreased starting next week. But once again, we do have three of the individuals from Steamboat have indicated a desire to support the community testing. So we're putting them in the schedule starting next Wednesday, which is when our current primary support personnel will be unavailable. So we are moving forward. We have a schedule and work to support the protocol monitoring and public outreach as well as community testing. PPE supplies, we are making small purchases here to offset some of our distributions we've had. The primary distributions lately have been out at the Haven to make sure they have what they need. I know I took some out there last Thursday, and we are in regular communication with Adrian out there. And she knows, has me on speed dial, I'm sure, so that if she needs anything, we'll make sure to get that to them. That is our priority now with the cases that have been popping up out there. Any questions on the mitigation protocols?
No.
All right, moving on. Actually, our, you know, Roberta's still snapping in and getting her feet underneath her. But we had, she was obviously very, through her experience, and she was much more able to engage in our recovery team with me this morning. As we've already discussed, a priority for her is that data managing. She threw out some ideas of consolidating databases, and she'll be meeting on that program. The one discussion that I think was very important that will require some further discussion and eventual decision point is the testing itself. And I brought up a case or a question I had where the Haven resident, as part of the Haven, was tested last week and came up negative. However, their condition deteriorated to the point that West Route Fire transported that individual to the hospital yesterday afternoon. And then at the hospital, they did a test and got a result, a positive result back within 90 minutes. So we, of course, that led to the discussion of well, is that a testing method that we should pursue for everybody, realizing that there may be some inaccuracies, but are the risks of those inaccuracies, do they outweigh the benefits of getting a 90-minute turnaround so that therefore we can get into the contact tracing quicker, you can do isolation quicker and whatnot. So we did not get to the point where we had a decision on that, but I do think it's something that needs to be discussed with a Dr. Harrington to weigh the, you know, the inaccuracy risks against the benefits of that quicker turnaround and then the subsequent action. So because I don't have much more of a update other than I do think this will be important. It needs to be discussed and arrive at a decision here pretty soon, hopefully maybe next week. Finance admin, no updates were provided. I know that Carrie Lippman
I sat down with Erwin over the FEMA PA, our public assistance grant portal, QA and the data that's in there. So that continues to progress. As you know, or as you probably heard, that the presidential declaration was extended, which will further extend our public assistance eligible costs. So we'll continue to put costs in there into the portal. And then, of course, the accounting office is working on the CARES Act funding and eligible costs and making sure that the two, you know, we don't cross the beams there, that we, what's in FEMA PA is differentiated from what goes into the CARES Act. So that is still tracking with no updates. And then finally, Commissioner Melton briefed the Protect Their Neighbors. We know that the planning grant was submitted. Commissioner Melton, I don't know if they gave you any kind of turnaround time of when that's expected to, decisions expected to be made on that.
They do have a turnaround time posted on their website, which is basically that they're, it was a little convoluted. It was something like, if you submit it by close of business Friday, then we'll review it by the fall, not the next Monday, but the following Monday. So I think that would mean I submitted it this Monday. So I would think that would mean by a week from Monday is when we would expect to know based on my read of that. But I also know that almost everything they're doing is sort of slow for so we'll see.
Okay. And I know you added this to the plan, and one thing I think I'm most looking forward to is I know the flu vaccine is going to be part of that, and we did talk about that. I should have provided that an update, but we did talk about that for both the public outreach and communication, as well as in the virus suppression line of operation about the availability of that seasonal flu vaccine. So that will obviously be a part. But I'm also concerned about at some point when a COVID-19 vaccine comes available, obviously there's going to be somewhat chaotic. There's going to be a significant demand and limited resources at first. So I think it's going to be really important for us to start having a good plan of how we're going to prioritize and how we're going to do that vaccination. I'm sure a lot of that will come from federal guidance as well as state, but obviously implemented at the local level. So I think a plan, a good solid plan for that vaccine when it becomes available is going to be critical. So those are, pending your questions, those are my updates for today.
Mo, this is Tim. Are we still conducting the community testing sites?
Yes, we are doing the community testing every Wednesday morning still from 8:30. We have it set up at, we start staying at 8 o'clock. Sometimes they may start taking at 8:30, definitely by 9, and then we'll do that through the lunchtime, and then they'll do, then they usually try to reserve the afternoon for some of the surveillance testing as required. So we do it every Wednesday morning still. It's still at the rodeo grounds. I have talked to the city regarding the availability of the rodeo grounds. We are definitely good through August. In September and October, they still have a couple events which are tentative. They haven't been officially canceled yet, but they don't know whether they're going to continue. But even if they do, with our time frame of the Wednesday mornings, they don't anticipate that being a showstopper. However, in November is when they start winterizing, and I believe that facility will then definitely be unavailable. So we definitely have that location through August, most likely still available through October.
Approximately how many people continue to show up for these test days on a weekly basis?
I haven't been getting the numbers, but I know that they, I believe they were doing about the way they have it set up, they can do about 30 an hour, because I think we set up in 50-minute blocks of about 8 people, and we're generally getting them done, you know, by about 12:30. So I think it's been right around 100.
And are we limiting access to that testing in any way now, or is it still open to anybody that wants it?
That is a question. I have to get the specifics from public health, but I don't believe it's being limited. People just have to call in to the 5577 number. They'll ask them some questions. So for community testing, I don't believe there's been any limitation.
Thank you. Other questions?
I know we did have some, we know that we've had some of the fire departments are transporting COVID patients, so we're organizing some specific tests for them, but we did have them, if they could, go into the community testing site as well. So I don't believe we've been turning people away, and we basically have them schedule reservations, one, so we can make sure we have the testing supplies available, and then two, so that we don't get a large backlog there and traffic management issues. That's been the primary reason for the scheduling, not so much of turning people away.
Other questions for Mo?
I have a question. This is Eric. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Eric.
Mo, on Wednesday, Jennifer Bach with the city sent a termination letter regarding the ice rink lease. I know you and I chatted by email, and I understand you don't have an issue with going ahead and having that lease terminated. Is that right?
That is correct.
Then may I suggest, I think Mark's on the line. I don't have screen, but I think I heard him earlier. I think it's appropriate that Mark go ahead and sign that termination without any further motion by the board.
Eric, I'm happy to do that. I can also send a note to City Manager Gary Suter, just notifying him that I accomplished that today.
Thank you.
Yeah, send him a thank you with that too, Mark. Yep. Same email.
Well, and I've been buying him lunch a lot too, Doug. So, but I'm happy to do so. You bet.
Any more questions for Mo? Nope. All right, Mo. Thank you very much for your update. Have a great day.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Department of Human Services, staffing, hiring, and funding. Kelly, I take it that you are going to be the one talking to us about this?
That's me. Hi, everyone. Good morning.
Good morning, Kelly.
How is everyone?
Good.
So I'll just go right into it. We have a couple of vacancies that I'm not sure during the transition if they were approved before or after the hiring freeze. So I just wanted to kind of give you a rundown of what's going on right now with human services, staffing, and then to just get approval or consideration or for a couple of positions that we have. We got permission to hire a child support person. We had Liz leave about a month and a half ago, and we were able to interview that position, and we actually got two really good candidates. And so we'd like to be allowed to hire the two people. The reason I would advocate for this, even during a hiring freeze and even during a time we're trying to make cuts, is we are seeing an increase in services and will continue to. Child support's a key component for assistance programs, as we want to make sure that all the kids are getting support from both parents And then it helps with, you know, even a parent that's paying child support, we have better outcomes for those kids that receive child support. So I would like, and then the main other thing with budget wise is child support's one of the programs that we get an allocation for. Child support is kind of a funky one where if we spend $100,000 or $1 million, we pay 33% and they pay 66%. So it would be a 33% cost to the county for both of those positions. We have it in the budget. We've always had three positions, so I'm not asking for another position. I'm just asking to go to full staff level for that, based on that. So it's in the budget. We will have cost savings because of the vacancies. We will have cost savings because these people will start at lower levels of entry points. So again, I'd like to be able to extend one offer to the person that I think we're given permission for, and then get permission to hire or offer the position to both.
So I guess the question I have is, so Mark, I mean, so we've kind of thrown this over to you a little bit. So, and again, I'm appreciate the process here, figure out how we have a process or whatever. I don't have any issues, especially with these being funded at 66% by outside dollars as well. So just figure out what we figured out here.
I have a different question. Kelly, your communication form lists a few other positions. Are we going to just talk about each of those, or?
That was the steps I'm going, but I'm happy to do whatever process you want. I just thought I'd go down child support, okay. Child welfare, first impressions, but you guys run the show however you want it.
I just didn't say anything because I thought you were going to keep going after reading your communication form. But either, I don't care, Tim. Your pleasure.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate to discuss them one at a time so that we don't lose track. So my question for you, Kelly, is maybe you should describe to us the risk that would be taken or the negative consequences of not filling the child support position.
Great question. The risk would be slower turnaround for child support, burnout for our seasoned worker. This is the second time I've been here in 3 years that we've had turnover, where it's just been her and then two staff have left right around the same time. Best practices at the state is to have a caseload of around 150 to 200. We have about 400 cases right now. So having 400 cases for one person, and then she's also a working supervisor. So well, in theory, she could have up to 200 cases and we could have two workers. That would be really lean. That would be really stressful because she also has a supervisory stuff. With the pandemic, she's following state guidelines. She also has another role, which is the Title IV administrator that supports child welfare. So, I mean, in theory, we could get by with two staff people based on the state numbers of 150 to 200, but that would be really stressful because that would be at least, you know, some of that state stuff, some of that management stuff would not be met or taken care of. And then we're also gonna have two new people that have to come in and get trained. That's where I'm really advocating for that. So then what would happen is we would have a backlog of child support cases, backlog of modifications. And I think especially now when we're struggling with, you know, unemployment rates and things like that, we don't want to have unintended consequences where it takes way too long to get a child support modification and either the custodial parent or the non-custodial parent is left in a bind where they're waiting for months to get child support adjusted to the appropriate level.
Thank you. Any more questions regarding the child support positions? Okay, Kelly, go ahead and move on to the next one.
Does that mean I have permission to do both of those, or do we want to follow up later on with that?
No, that does not mean you have permission yet.
Okay.
Go ahead. So let's work our way through all of them, and then we'll circle back.
Fair enough. I just want to make sure I have clarification. Perfect. Okay, the next one is the child welfare supervisor. Grace Levin retired. We have had since at least January a vacancy for a child welfare caseworker where Lauren Rising left. We've tried twice to post just the caseworker position and have not had good candidates. Because of the low numbers with COVID, the low numbers with no school, we have been able to manage it, but a child welfare supervisor is critical. So we really need to hire that position. The fortunate thing for the county is both Julie and I have experience with child welfare. That being said, it's a huge burden to do child welfare supervisor on top of other stuff. We are happy to do it as long as we need to. It just, you know, we want to make sure our caseworkers are supportive. So right now we just have two caseworkers, and one huge thing to think of with caseworkers is caseworkers are on call. So that means that half the year, each of these caseworkers are on call. So even the burden of, you know, half the month, one of the workers on call, half the month, the other workers are on call. They don't have support of a supervisor. I would argue that this is critical to the community and the safety of the community to have a child welfare supervisor hired. We are not requesting at this point to fill the vacant caseworker. A couple different reasons. I think hiring a supervisor first, letting that supervisor get their feet on the ground, then they can hire a new caseworker when the numbers get back up to the level that we'll need a full staff of four caseworkers. So I think we can get by with a supervisor and two caseworkers, so three child welfare staff for a while, but we just need to push for that child welfare supervisor.
Questions?
Yeah, sorry, Kelly. I think I missed or misunderstood what you said at the beginning. You've had trouble identifying a caseworker or a supervisor?
A caseworker. We didn't try to post for the supervisor because we had grace, but when we had a caseworker vacancy, we interviewed one round. No one was a good candidate. We posted another time and did not get any good candidates. So at this point, we said, you know what? We're going into the pandemic. The numbers are manageable. We'll just stay with that. But I think the supervisor, we posted the position. I think we'll have potential for internal candidates. Supervisors are normally easier to hire. It's at a higher pay grade, and you get people that are really invested into the career already. So I think we'll have better luck with the supervisor than the caseworker.
Okay, thank you.
Kelly, is there a reason to believe that with the potential for schools reopening at some level, that we'll start to see some more reporting of child welfare cases?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions on that position? Okay.
And to clarify, Tim, we almost always see an increase when the school starts up of child welfare reporting. And then I expect to see the same or more, but normally it's like that. But I especially think with this pandemic, you might see a more increase since there hasn't been contact for a while. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we're all a little concerned about what might surface after all of this. Yes.
Yeah.
And then finally, you've got were we going to talk about the first impressions position?
Yeah, I can talk on that briefly. We had interviewed for that, so we had permission to rehire that. We interviewed for that, and the best candidate we have, or the best two candidates we had, did not live in Route County. And I couldn't, in good conscience, I mean, this was like mid-March or April, have someone, you know, relocate during the middle of a pandemic, not having, you know, visited before, all that kind of stuff. And so I just wanted to kind of put a hold on, pause on that position. But I think with the centers reopening, I'd like to repost that position. I think we have potential for good local candidates after it's been a little bit of time. So I'd like to repost that position. One thing I want to wait on just a second. I have a soft confirmation from Templehoy and Buell that we are refunded. We'll get renewed for our grant, which we always have. So I'm not worried about that. I just haven't gotten the final confirmation with the budget. So I want to get that before I offer the position, just to look at the salary and things like that. Because we'll be starting the person at a lower salary than Stephanie was at, we will be pretty close to being able to manage that. The county has always kind of given a little bit of in-kind for first impressions, about $13,000, but we can also use TANF funds for that, and then our managed care savings for that program. So we'll be pretty close to having most of that position covered by grant funding.
Any more questions for Kelly or comments?
I hate to bring this up, but when we were hiring for first impressions before, we did have some conversation about whether or not we thought that the salary range we have was appropriate. did you, I'm trying to remember, did you and Kathy do a comparison on that position at all when we, because, you know, we, Stephanie's been in that, was in that position for what, like 14 years or something.
Right. So, right.
I don't remember if you guys did a comparison or not.
I did. We did. And Kathy didn't think it could go much higher. I was hoping that we could start it at a higher rate. I think with the shift of what we're doing, I think we should make it higher. I have managed care savings that we could use to spend it. And again, we can use TANF, and we can also reallocate the Temple Wayne Beal grant to more salary. I'd like to offer it at a higher starting point. I think we get some better candidates. The two people that I really liked were on the fence about it, based mostly on salary. I can tell you from helping do it, it's a big job. And especially if we want to make some big changes, I do think we need someone with a strategic planning background and some kind of leadership and facilitation skills. So I would want to, that might be one of those things, is instead of just rehiring it, see if I can get it, you know, get classified at a higher rate, or get some way to be able to start it at a little bit higher.
So yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to talk about increasing salaries right now, but I would also just say that I really believe that childcare is foundational to economic recovery. And I think it's been a challenge for you, Kelly, to try to do all the first impressions work and your job. And I think we need someone in there who's going to help facilitate that group to help support what's needed. I think I read an article the other day predicting that we would see the impacts of the challenges with childcare during this economic recession for like 30 years. I mean, that was just one analysis, but when you think about, you know, a generation of parents and kids, and I don't know, I mean, you guys know this is really important to me. And I think it should be important to all of us. And, you know, we don't want to pay someone more just to pay them more, but we do want to make sure we have someone that can provide really strong leadership in there. So I don't know the right answer, but just wanted to raise that question.
So it's interesting that the after Kathy went through and did the resurvey or look at the thing, why it didn't come out any better than that, though. So I guess I guess maybe we need to ask her again to relook at it, because it is what it is, too. So
yeah, I agree. We don't want to be totally out of line with what comparable positions in other places are paying. But it does seem a little low for what we're asking that person to do, I would say, from a skill set standpoint.
So to remind everybody about the function of first impressions, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kelly or Beth, is really twofold. It's to help increase access for early childhood education and quality, correct? I mean, it, Is there much more to it than that?
Tim, come on.
Well, I mean that is the basic function. It's not
it's not
just quality, because sometimes I think there may have been some confusion in some people's mind. Is first impressions just there to provide professional development for providers and to support providers in quality initiatives, but it is also to help increase access?
I think if you look at the you know, state information about what early childhood councils do, yes, it's identifying really any needs in early childhood in the community and coordinating resources to try to address those gaps. And clearly the gap in our community right now is about availability. Affordability will, I think, be an issue in perpetuity, quite frankly, and is something we'll always have to work on. And I think historically, First Impressions has done a really good job of supporting quality, and we don't want to lose that, but it's certainly not the only role of First Impressions. I don't know if you'd add anything to that, Kelly.
Thank you for that. I think a couple different things. I think it's worth, if you guys are okay with it, to revisit the job description, because I think there were some things in Stephanie's job description, and at no fault to that. She was in that position for several years, and it kind of morphed as she went. But I think a lot of it was a lot of administration, helping schedule meetings for the directors, helping do paperwork for the directors, which I think is helpful. But I really want this to be of a more of a policy support, forward-thinking person. And then if you look at, like you said, Beth, other councils, this position was an entire agency, and it is an entire agency in a lot of other counties, right? So Early Childhood Options in Summit County has about 11 staff. And, you know, Eagle County and Grand County even has more staff. And so I think if we can argue that this is not the position it was in the past in a better way, so I can put some more work into making sure that we can argue that, then we can justify it. But I'm with you. I'm not trying to just, I want to get a number that works so we can hire someone. I really want to get that right person, because if we do this right and hire this person right, they will be able to find those resources and funding and leverage the current funding that we have to better serve the community than just, you know, giving a check out to the centers for tuition assistance, if we can figure out ways to make sure we're leveraging the funding. So that's how I would argue that position, and I'm happy to do that if I have your support.
I think the other piece, Kelly, to add to what you just said, which is partially what you just said, but a little bit different, you know, there's a lot of money out there for early childhood, both locally and statewide. And I would expect that this person would be able to identify funds to help support their position too. It's not just the county paying this extra money, but if we really get someone there who's doing that work, then I think it would be an expectation that they're bringing in money to support that extra cost. Wouldn't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. I just wouldn't want to give it to him right off the gate. So if we could figure out that, you know, that managed care savings for the short term, which is the reason we have that there, then we could get that person, because like we did, Beth, we tried to write that grant and came close to getting it, that had funding in there, things like that.
So I could support the revisiting of the job description. And, you know, it was some frustration of mine while I was a chairperson or co-chair of the First Impressions, is that it was tough for that group of people, you know, going to one meeting a month or a couple of meetings a month to really come up with a strategic direction for the program. And I think it will take, I agree, it's going to take a person with that kind of a skill set to be able to look forward and help guide the council towards some kind of strategic direction. So I could support that.
Thank you.
So I think you need to modify the job to whatever you want to, that we need to have to do for the job. And then we also need to pay them for whatever it is that we're paying them to do. So I'm fine with you working to figure out. I don't want to change the job description just to get them more pay, but 100%. We need to do whatever you need to do to fill the job and do the thing that the county and all of the centers need to have happen, and then we pay them appropriately. So I'm on board with all that. So
thank you.
All right, so let's circle back up to the top, talk about the, are we ready to direct Kelly to fill these other vacant positions?
I feel comfortable filling all these positions. I mean, like Doug said, the county's share of these positions is only 33%, and in the case of the First Impressions position is lower than that. And I think Kelly has stated how critical these are to health and safety of our community. I think we're definitely expecting an increase in caseload for the Human Services Department just overall. So I'm in support of Kelly filling these, all of these positions.
So I'm supportive of these two. Yeah. Again, especially it's like I'm getting some feedback here too. So anyhow,
I don't know where it's coming from.
But anyhow, I'm supportive of them. Feeling pretty soft, Kelly, this morning. I got my tractor stuck at 7. So hey, I'm good. I'm soft.
Appreciate it.
I had to get pulled out. So.
Oh no! Way to start a Friday.
Yeah, I'm supportive. It's clear that the need exists, and with the funding support, yeah, I think we should move forward.
Thank you for that. And then just to help us know that we're being really, really fiscally responsible, we are not rehiring the legal assistant at this point or the Route to Success program at this point. And Eric and I are working to reduce the attorney's costs by considering transferring Mick over to the attorney's office to help have a management of that. So we're going to continue to work on the budget and look at that to figure that out. So we are doing our best to be fiscally responsible and still be able to serve the community.
So I was interested in that, you know, the moving Mick over to the attorney's office was going to save money. How's that? So somebody's going to have to help me there a little bit. So we win the lottery or what? So
so the attorney is paid for the 80-20 child. So the same funding source that pays the child welfare supervisor, same allocation. That's an 80%, 20%. One of the things is I think that there was, I feel that with more support, and that's why we hired the legal assistant, with more support, I think some of the work that Mick was doing in our county office was things that were above her pay grade. You know, we don't need her doing copies and things like that. And we don't have a paralegal like the legal office has. I've had some conversations about, since I'm not an attorney, I'm not as good at supporting Mick on helping her with, you know, prioritizing time management. I think there's another level of child welfare staff being used to having Mick right there and can get instant support from her. So I think the separation would be good. And to give a historical, every county I've worked at, the attorney has not been in human services. And I like that model with it separate because it does separate. I think sometimes there's too much connection-ish with Mick and the child welfare staff, and I think we want to provide what is casework and what is legal work, and sometimes that area gets grayed when you have caseworkers and legal right next to each other. You know, Mick was at, you know, there was some kind of agreement in the past that was before me where she was hired at, you know, working around 32 hours a week. Eric was able to talk to Mick to see if she could go up to 40, which I think right there having an extra 8 hours will help us. So if we have our salary to 8 hours, that should reduce the amount of work that Linnea and Eric have to do on top of that, because we looked at her hours for the last year and she's normally around 33 hours a week with the outliers of the trials and things like that, which will continue to happen. And when they happen, it's way too much work for Mick. So that's where Eric and I are going to try to meet in the next week or so, kind of discuss that, come up with a game plan of how we can talk about that. To be clear, we want to make sure that the community is served. And so if it does mean that we need more legal services, we can. But I think having an approach where we have an attorney manage another attorney, we have support of paralegal, we have separation of human services and the attorney's office, I think we have potential to manage the attorney's office's time and the potential to make sure that there's not these outliers where when there's a trial, someone's working 70 plus hours a week. And Lynn, Eric's on the phone too, if he wants to chime in.
Well, while we're waiting for Eric to chime in, Kelly, thank you. That seems like a really thoughtful explanation. Thank you for that.
I don't have anything to add.
Good. Perfect. All right, Kelly, I believe that you have received the direction you were looking for.
Thank you for your time, everyone. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on our agenda is consideration of extension to communication services contract with Robin Shepherd. Mark, are you going to talk to us about this?
Tim, I'm more than happy to introduce this. I know that prior to my being seated here in the interim county manager position, that you had an arrangement that you made during the outset of the COVID crisis to go ahead and utilize the services from Robin doing business as Wayfinder. And I think that what we've discovered is, quite frankly, is that those services are very critical to our ongoing operations. And my strong recommendation to the commissioners this morning would be that we continue that relationship with Wayfinder and with Robin. I think also it would be in our best interest that we also do this on a longer term than what we've been doing. We've been doing this either on a month or a 2 month basis. I think it's in the best interest of all parties that we would have this extend through December of this current calendar year. And I think that that can allow us to go ahead and do some better strategic planning associated with all of those activities. I know that we commissioners, we talked previously about some expanded roles for Robin. I know we talked a little bit about grantsmanship. We talked a little bit about some assistance to some other departments, maybe a newsletter within the framework of county operations. But I think with some good feedback from you, we've gone ahead and just focused once again on the most critical functions relative to COVID impacts. And that will be the focus for Robin and her company going forward. There is one addendum that you see within the context of that agreement, and that is that we are using the services of an individual that is helping us in terms of some data management. Robin can certainly explain that in a little bit more detail, but we've got an individual that's just a little more savvy within that software framework, and he's agreed to a maintenance fee of approximately $500 a month. So you'll see there a total of $8,500 as the proposal. That's $8,000 a Wayfinder or to Robin and $500 to this individual doing business under the Wayfinder label. So I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, commissioners, and I know Robin's on the line as well.
Commissioners, questions, comments?
I don't think I have any questions. This is really just an extension of the current contract, and I see that, you know, the actual contract isn't included here, but I assume that it was reviewed by legal the first time we signed it and that this is just an amendment to the end date.
I know, Kendra, that we went ahead and forwarded the contract yesterday. Is that under a separate distribution format to the commissioners, the proposed contract from Wayfinder?
I'm checking right now to see what is on there.
Well, again, it's just an extension of the existing contract with this one small amendment, correct?
That's correct, Tim. The only amendment is the fact that really it's a longer time frame than what we've utilized in the past.
And the web consultant.
The web consultant. Well, we've actually, in the last contract that you approved, the web consultant was included in that last renewal that you had. So we've been using him since, oh golly, I think at least since May.
I guess my comment would be we continue to hear about how important our communications are to the public, and it's certainly something we need to continue doing. And I don't think there's any doubt that need is going to exist through the end of the year.
Two other caveats, commissioners, and I should have included those in my remarks. One is, as you know, and I'm sure you're aware, that these particular services are reimbursable in terms of the CARES Act funding that has been allocated to Round County. So we've got a reimbursable revenue stream for this. Secondly,
Mark, FEMA as well, right?
Yes, that is okay. Also correct. And the 75-25, Beth, that's correct. The other thing, and I'm going to be very honest and very direct about this, I really cannot readily identify anybody on staff right now that could step into this role and responsibility without limitations in terms of other duties that those individuals should be responsible for. Secondly, I don't believe that, at least in-house, internally, we've got anybody that's got the same level of PIO skills, public information skills, that Robin brings to the table. So I think that again, I think it's a critical function for us right now. I think we've got somebody that has performed very, very well for us, knows our community, and I think it's a critical function going forward.
Great. Well, perhaps the contract should end December 30th to align with the CARES Act funding. I have no idea why the CARES Act funding ends the 30th instead of the 31st. That was mostly a joke. I have no idea why the CARES Act funding is set, is that way.
Because the crisis will be over on the 30th.
Oh, good. We're not expecting it to continue through the 31st.
Nope, not even through the entire year. It'll be over with Great. Before the end of the year.
Glad to hear it.
I think we're ready to move forward with this. Does this require a motion?
Yeah, because I think someone will need to sign the contract, right?
That someone, yes.
Who signs it? Do we know? Is it Tim or is it Mark that signs it? Probably Tim, right?
Should be Tim, given the amount. Right. Should be Tim.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the extension of the contract between Rout County and Robin Shepherd for communication services through December 31st, and authorize your signature on that contract.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Very good. We're ready to move on to the balance of our agenda, our COVID-19 work session, I believe. Anybody, I have one item, but I'll wait for you guys to offer any items that you have for discussion today.
I don't have any items.
I don't have anything. I'd like to continue hearing updates from Mark on transition and on staffing. So if we could get that as well, that'd be great.
Was a good conversation this morning. I appreciate Roberta jumping right in. And so I listened in on the recovery call. And so, yep, she'll be doing real well. So drinking from a big fire hose, but anyhow, so it's good.
She certainly is jumping in and taking ownership of all these things, which I think is really critical. She seems to be doing a great job. I hope she's going to take at least a couple hours off this weekend, though.
She's going to go on a long bike ride. Commissioners, I had a chance to meet with Roberta yesterday afternoon. We met for about an hour and walked through some very important items that are on the public health plate. So some quick updates along those lines, and I'll start with staffing. Roberta, as I think she's mentioned to you in her remarks on Wednesday, and also has mentioned this in the recovery call, she's using all the avenues at her disposal to put out a strong advertisement and recruitment for the public health nurse. That's, as you can well imagine, and we talked about that, it's in very high demand right now, those types of positions across the state, across the nation. But she's got some other contacts and some other associations that hopefully will boost our recruitment efforts to go ahead and get somebody as quickly as possible in that very important position. Secondly, the epidemiologist. Roberta took some time this week to go through the applications that have been received. She has tentatively identified three individuals that we would like to interview for that position. And we would like to undertake those interviews as early as first part of next week. Beth, we were wondering if you would be so kind to also help with that as you did on the interim public health director position. Your background, your expertise would be extremely helpful and beneficial. We also know that Dr. Harrington has also agreed to be a part of that interview panel. So right now it would be Roberta, potentially Beth, Dr. Harrington, and then somebody from the HR office, probably Kathy, that would be engaged in that interview early part of next week. And of course, as we know, we want to move on that as quickly as we possibly can. On continuing on the recruitment front, as you know, in prior discussions, we have a total of 7 contact tracers that have been hired. We also have a backup in some connections that Roberta has made with CDPHE, that we have some backup contact tracers that can be used from statewide resources. So that's also some good news along those lines. Mo mentioned to you this morning that we've got 7 individuals from the city of Steamboat Springs, those people are assisting us with our community testing events and our monitoring, education, compliance efforts. Again, as we've talked about this same item before, commissioners, we really want to see how that plays out as we deploy those people. And I think that's going to be something that will determine for us whether we feel that we want to move forward on the health educator positions, because, you know, that would be some of the critical features that they would be involved in. So we want to see just exactly the utilitarian value that we're going to get from these individuals that have stepped forward from the city of Steamboat Springs. We have gone ahead and contacted CDPHE about the refrigerator. You may recall that we're eligible to get a large clinical refrigerator. We've gotten the green light and the thumbs up just to order it. They've given us some descriptions in terms of what would be beneficial, what would fit, but we've gotten the green light to do that. The last thing that we've talked about briefly, but I know that's probably what Tim is going to visit with you about, is facilities. So I'm not going to steal his thunder, but we once again are anticipating that we can be in a different location in terms of housing the individuals in public health right now and the anticipated hirings, space allocation for some of the very important supplies we've got, clinical space to include potential testing. So those are the items that we covered yesterday, and hopefully that's a timely update for you commissioners. And again, I know Tim has some updates relative to space allocation.
Hey, Mark, would you or Roberta just send me the names of, I have the applications, but will you just send me the names of the folks we're going to interview for epidemiology so that I can take a look specifically at their resumes? And I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
So as far as the space, now that Roberta is on board with us, and as we had toured one of the proposed spaces, there's been some clarification about some more specific needs for public health. And in particular, it touches on that clinical side, so that whatever space we choose to lease has the ability to bring people indoors, and especially as the weather will be getting colder, and to be able to do testing and other kinds of clinical activities related to other parts of public health. And I think that led us to second guess the path we were headed down in terms of the space that we had looked at, and not to rule it out, but it did present some challenges that I would not have thought of, but that Roberta had pointed out. And interestingly, of all people, Roberta suggested another building that she was aware of, and as it turned out, the owner of that building is, I have a longtime business relationship with, not existing, but in the past, and I called that individual up, and subsequently, Julie Kennedy and I took a quick run over there yesterday to see if it might be more appropriate than some of the other spaces that we had looked at. And surprisingly, it presents what looks to both Julie and I as maybe an even better opportunity than what we have looked at in the past. So, and this kind of falls under the heading of a conversation I had with Mark a couple of days ago, which is, yeah, you know what, maybe we need to, as Mark put it, kick the tires on some other properties that may be available before we enter into any kind of an agreement. So my suggestion, Mark, is that especially given Julie's opinion of the space in question, that we reassemble the team and go on a tour of that other facility that we looked at yesterday. I'm gonna, if that makes sense to you, I'm going to contact the owner of the building and find out just some rough details in terms of what the cost would be and length of lease. And there clearly would be some revisions to the space that would need to take place, not wholesale revisions, but I think there's some flooring and ceiling tiles that probably need to be removed and replaced, and increasing the size of a doorway, relatively minor alterations that would need to take place to make this space work. I think the key thing is, and this is really going to require some more input from Roberta, is the community testing that we've been conducting on a regular basis. Is it realistic to think that that can continue to take place in an outdoor environment, or if we really do need to set up some kind of a clinical space that would be available for folks on a by appointment basis so that work can take place inside.
Tim, thanks for being proactive on that. I'm looking forward to you pulling out your hard hat and getting to work on the flooring in there. But I have a, what was my question? Oh, two questions. Could you just send us some information about it? It's just really curiosity. Would love to know where it is and kind of what you're thinking about. I trust your judgment on the walkthrough side of it. And then I guess my second question is probably more for Mark. I know that we have what's been described as very short-term solution for these folks in terms of the cabin and we've talked about, you know, they can't just all sit on top of each other. It's not safe. It's not a good work environment. How long is our short-term solution going to be viable? Because I agree with Tim wholeheartedly that we don't want to rush into something that's not a good fit, but we don't want to drag it out and create a problematic situation. So what's kind of our timeline, you know, that we can't possibly exceed?
Beth, that's a good question. I think we really truly have about what I would say is about a 4 to 6 week window that we can work under the current conditions. And again, as we take the existing space that some of the public health employees are in right now in the planning office and the cabin, I think we can get through for that time frame, again, 4 to 6 weeks. But I'll also say, as soon as we're able to move into the facility that we anticipate, the better off we're going to be, because we are then going to have our people in one central location with the right clinical areas, with the right equipment at their disposal. And we're certainly going to be in a much better place the sooner we can do that. But as far as critical mass right now, we're okay on that 4 to 6 weeks. The other part of that is, Beth, as you know, and we talked about, the epidemiologist, we're gonna guess once we have selected somebody for that position, we may have a couple weeks before they move into the full-time role. So, and that's certainly a point that we're growing pretty rapidly. We need that space for them. Because they might also be in a situation, if we have a bullpen area, that individual may want to work with the contact tracers and have some of those joint meetings going forward. So again, I think we're in about a 4 to 6 week window as far as what we can work with right now.
And any of these spaces, either the ones that we were previously looking at or the one that I identified yesterday, they're going to take several weeks to have them prepared, IT put into place, furniture put into place. So yeah, to more directly address your question, Beth, yeah, I think we need to do something here. We need to make some kind of a commitment here within the next week or two. I mean, we need to move. It's urgent. We need to move quickly. And there's probably not much more tire kicking to be done, although I know Julie was going to reach back out to the individual that she had been working with to just make sure that there wasn't something else out there that had been overlooked. This, what I was looking at really surprised me. I didn't expect that it had the potential that it did, but after I walked through it and I had Julie with me, we were both kind of like, wow, this could actually work. This may really make sense. But, you know, obviously Roberta and IT and facilities need to look at it and arrive at the same conclusion. So, Mark, I'm going to talk to the owner here today, but my thought is that I'll get back to you as quickly as I can, but we ought to be setting up that group for a walkthrough Monday or Tuesday of next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tim, I'll be interested to hear what Roberta has to say, but we were doing testing when there was still snow on the ground, you may remember, back in March. And I think most places have really been utilizing that drive-through model just to reduce the risk. So we'll see what Roberta has to say about that. That's not to say there's not a need for some clinical space, but it'll be interesting to hear. My guess is the other clinical activities would also be immunization clinic types of things. Right. And same thing, people do drive through, you know, immunizations as well. So, or maybe it's a combination of both. I don't know, but it'll be interesting to hear. Roberta would know. It's certainly not.
And you know, the bottom line here is that any of these spaces that are currently under consideration are not going to be perfect. Each one of them has its own set of drawbacks, and we're probably not going to have the ideal setup until such time as we may build a new building. So there's going to be compromises that are going to have to be made.
So I just want to make sure we have our objectives lined out here and what we need and what we want. And again, we can make some sacrifices, but if we don't have the gold standard out there identified out there somehow to figure out what that is, you don't know what you're adjusting down from. And so I just want to make sure. And again, I'm doing some more thinking about what the 3-year lease. Yeah, that's kind of like a non-starter for me too, after thinking about it last night. Hell, that's $150,000 a year. So really.
Well, it wasn't that much, was it? I thought it was about
46. No, it was $12,000 a month. $12,300, according to.
But I pointed out to Dan, he was relying on too large of a square footage number there.
Okay.
So that number, I think, one of the spaces that we were looking at was closer to $67,000 or $70,000 a year.
Okay.
But still, a 3-year commitment over $200,000.
Yeah,
I'm with Doug. I don't, unless it was like there's absolutely no other option at all, I'm not that interested in considering a 3-year lease.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of agree with what Beth said too about the clinic side too, you know. And I don't know, I'm mixed emotions on that too. There's still the drive-through thing and figuring out how those things could happen. I was assuming that when we were talking about this, we were going to have area that had a big enough hard surface and parking, or a parking area that, you know, we could set up some type of a tent or have the facility and do outside drive-through, as Beth said. So yeah.
And I'm fine. I mean, to follow up on that, I would definitely take Roberta's recommendation. My concern would be, let's not put all of our public health people in the same space and then start bringing people into that space who possibly or probably have COVID. I mean, that seems like a recipe for disaster to me. I'm sure Roberta will think about that, but we need to mitigate our risk on that. We can't have an outbreak among our public health staff.
So one of the advantages of the space that I looked at yesterday was there was, interestingly, a separate entrance into a single room that looked a lot like a clinical space room, where you could actually walk somebody into that room, perform whatever test you had, and turn them around and walk them back out, and they would not ever be mingled in with the rest of the staff. So, okay, well, I will proceed on that, and I think we all understand the urgency.
Tim, yes. And you touched on this, and so it's probably timely that I bring this forward as well for the commissioners this morning. As we now start to anticipate what our staffing level is going to be for public health going forward, you may recall in your conversations with Mountain Architecture, the space that had been tentatively identified for having public health in the future in the new building. And if you probably also recall, you had identified a total of 3 spaces for public health employees in that building. Obviously, with what we have now identified as far as our current needs and potentially our future needs, I think that we probably need to go back and make adjustments to that. And on the heels of that, I've taken the liberty to reach out to Mountain Architecture to ask them for a brief meeting to talk about any adjustments we can make to that profile before they come back to you with some of their new design iterations. And that is tentatively scheduled Mountain Architecture and the team to come back to you on August 13th. So Chancey has tried to organize a meeting for next week in which once again the team can sit down and we begin to talk about just exactly how we work within that footprint. But I know that's an important consideration going forward, and I just want to make the commissioners aware of those discussions.
I think, sorry, Tim, go ahead.
And I think the good news on that too is among Roberta's qualifications and her skill set is a specific emphasis on facility planning for public health.
And industrial hygiene. You're exactly right, Tim.
Mark, thanks for being proactive on that. I guess this is sort of just a rhetorical question. I mean, there's a little like chicken and egg, right? We know we're trying to figure out what appropriate staffing is for public health, and we know we need to build this building and that we're planning on putting public health in it. And it's just sort of a timing question to me. I mean, we don't want to, I don't know what it is. Like, do we ask Mountain Architecture to have a kind of a flexible plan where office spaces could be used for human services or public health? Do we figure out our public health needs and then design the building? I don't really know. Just kind of throwing it out there, thinking out loud, honestly.
Yeah, my hope was that we were going to maximize the opportunity of the site. So,
right.
And it didn't matter which color department we had in there or whatever. So
are we assigning colors to departments now?
Yeah, red, white, green. Okay. I'm not sure. So.
Color coding them.
Yeah, but anyhow, I think we talked about that. You know, we were that was my hope, that we were just going to maximize the building opportunities on the site. So,
It does seem like it sort of pushes us to the possibility that I see Mark making the gesture, the second story on that one portion where we were only planning a first story. That's probably the most likely scenario, I would think.
Well, one thing's for sure, given the critical needs that we already identified for human services, and now our greater understanding of the long-term needs for public health, it feels like we are inexorably moving towards building a building. And not that we're going to make that decision today, but it feels like something we're definitely moving towards. And it's really going to be an important part of the discussion in the 2021 budget. we'll really have to start making some firm commitments about dollar allocations in 2021.
Yeah, I think we just have a different scenario than we thought we did, right?
Yeah, but not so dramatically different in that I think we've identified the correct site. We feel pretty sure that we've got enough room to do what we need to do. And as Doug has said over and over again, we only probably really get one bite at this apple. We better build as much as we feel like we can possibly afford to build to cover future needs.
And I'm not feel bad about leverage the OP payment, the Justice Center that stopped in 2025. That's not far out.
I agree. In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to do that, but I don't feel like that would be irresponsible to do it if we needed to.
Yeah, my point about a different situation is we sort of thought we could wait, right? And now we kind of are feeling like that's probably not a possibility.
Well, you can always wait, but there's a whole bunch of negative consequences associated with it. All right, do we have anything else for today's conversation?
I don't.
No?
Oh, I'm sorry, one other thing. I am planning on taking next Thursday and Friday off. It's my wedding anniversary. We're gonna go camping up in the Wind Rivers. It'll be nice. But I just say that because specifically for Kendra and Deanna in thinking about the agenda, because I know we're looking at some stuff around county manager and just making sure there aren't agenda items that where you need all three of us next Thursday and Friday.
I would say that would be up to you. We do have the executive sessions for the county manager interviews tentatively scheduled for Thursday and Friday.
I thought they were the following week. I thought you told us that Larry wasn't available next week.
Yeah.
He wasn't available this week, but he'll be available next week.
So it's just going to have to get pushed.
Yep.
Okay, I'll follow up with him and let him know we'll do the following Thursday and Friday instead.
Well, no, wait a minute, Doug. This is an opportunity for you.
I know. I was thinking of what the things we need to get on the agenda.
I'm sorry, you guys. I misunderstood what Kendra told us. I thought that Larry wasn't available until the following week. So,
well, honestly, Kendra, that was my recollection. It was next week that he was not available.
Okay, sorry about that.
It's all good.
That's okay. It's no big deal.
Thank you, guys. Sorry about that.
Nope, that's fine.
And if it doesn't, do we have to push it all the way back to the next Thursday and Friday? I mean, is there time earlier in the week? I don't want to cause us to keep pushing this off. Whatever you think, Kendra, but I think we could, if there's time earlier in the week, that would probably be better.
It depends on how late in the day you guys wanted to go. Already have Monday and Tuesday. You've got things set up already until about 11.
So there's no reason we can't work till 4 or 5 o'clock if we need to.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to have a lot of meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoon, but those I can miss them. They're mostly the industry work groups. I don't know how I got all the industry work groups that keep meeting on a weekly basis, but I mean, I'm happy to meet with them, but it's filled my calendar up for sure.
Okay. Yeah. I'll follow up and see if maybe we could just do like Monday, Tuesday, the 10th and 11th instead.
Thanks for that.
That'll work.
The other thing, I don't know, since we're still doing all these Zoom anyhow, even if we did, we have five. So, even if we did, one or two a day and not the three or four or something, anyhow, I'm fine too, whatever.
Actually, Doug, I like that a little bit because you know how it is, obviously. It ends up being really exhausting and splitting it up over 2 or 3 days is perfectly fine with me. So talk to Larry about that, Kendra.
It just shouldn't be next Thursday.
We had 2 days. We were going to do 3 the first day and 2 the second day. But we could split it into 3 days instead if you want.
You know, just depending on what works for the schedule.
Okay.
3 days may be a little bit long to spread it out. 2 days is probably good enough.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? Good work, guys. We will see you all on Monday. Have a great weekend.
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later, Mark.